This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Many Americans grew up in religious households. They gathered in churches, temples, and mosques. And in many ways, this is still a nation of believers. But the percentage of Americans who say they're absolutely certain that God exists has dropped to 63%, and the trends point downward. And only half of millennials say they're sure. So what to tell today's children when they ask tough questions about God and faith? For parents who are confused about what they believe, finding the right words and answers can be especially challenging. Anna Skates is a children's pastor in Franklin, Tennessee. She is giving a presentation on July 14th at the Wild Goose Festival in Hot Springs, North Carolina. It's called How to Talk to Kids When You Don't Know What You Believe. And she joins me now in what might be a much easier conversation. Hello, Anna.
Hi.
Good to have you here. Tell us who this conversation or who your advice is pitched to, because you can imagine kids in many households coming to parents who are at various places on the spectrum, from non-believing to church-going. So who is this advice aimed at?
Sure, yeah. Well, the church that I currently serve at is full of people who grew up in often very sort of traditional and sometimes fundamentalist, by definition, households, religiously speaking. And so these are people who've come out of that and are now sort of in a place of trying to restructure and rebuild what it is that they believe. And so they're trying to piece things together as they've sort of deconstructed what they grew up in and are trying to reconstruct that. But frankly, this is also a conversation I think that is important for folks who have never really been affiliated with any sort of religious tradition, but who consider themselves, you know, the spiritual but not religious sort of camp of people. I think this is also an important conversation for those folks as well.
So those are people who, you know, as you describe them, are sort of on a journey. They're open to inquiry. They're looking, and they still consider themselves on a path. And now the problem, kids who kind of want, especially early on, black and white concrete answers to things, are going to ask you, you know, the question, is there a God? And kind of what do you do? Is that a little bit of what you're approaching here?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And so what do you do? I mean, what happens in that case where the whole point is we want to keep you open to inquiry, but you've asked me a yes or no question?
Yeah, I think what's interesting about often adults' approach to kids is we see their questions as, like you said, they need these concrete answers. They're looking to us to answer their questions specifically. But in my approach, I look at it as, what if your concrete answer to their questions is just your presence and just your validation of their questions? Dr. Lisa Miller wrote this beautiful book called The Spiritual Child, and her whole thing is, you know, your kids, yes, are asking you questions and they are looking to you for answers, but more than anything, they're asking you these questions, sometimes the big questions, less to get a concrete answer from you, but more to feel validated in their wondering and in their questioning. And so perhaps we as adults and as parents can look at those questions and see our concrete answers less as we need to give them XYZ, but rather like, I just need to be here with them and journey alongside them as they ask these questions and encourage their questions and say we don't know when we don't know. Right. And tell them what we think when we think we know what we think. You know?
Well, no, I'm hearing you, because what you're saying is that the answer that I hear way too often on this show, but I appreciate the place it comes from, that's a good question, is probably something you should say to your kids, right? And that it's okay, that they really are not going to die if you don't have the answer. In fact,
right,
they may be a little more resilient and open to inquiry than the average adult in some ways.
Right, exactly. I think it's interesting, like in any other, you know, realm of information, we don't feel the need to give our kid everything all at once right now. We're okay to let it be gradual, but for some reason, I think a lot of us, when it comes to these sort of religious or spiritual questions, feel like we have to have it all figured out for them right now. And you don't. It's really okay to tell your kid, like, gosh, I don't know. What do you think? Like, maybe ask them what they think, because likely they're asking that question with something already in mind. So ask them about it. Like, help them unpack their question a little bit and just be with them in that moment. I think that's the most important thing you can do.
What's the difference between helping them unpack the question, so validating the fact that you have put your finger on something very important to your congratulations, and versus, let's say, I don't know what you think, and I can hear some parents thinking, that would shake my my children's confidence in me. If they think I don't know, how would they trust me again? How would you answer that?
And, oh, gosh. That's that's interesting. I think I would encourage parents, again, like, gosh, your presence with your kid, I think, is the most important thing you can give them. I don't think that you not having a concrete, definitive answer by your definition of what's concrete and definitive does anything to shake their confidence in you. Goodness.
Well, and ask me, forgive me for interrupting, but I'm thinking about what you said earlier about unpacking the question. If the question is there a God? You think, that's a good question. When you say God, when you said that just now, what were you thinking? What was the picture in your mind when you asked me what was a God? Tell me about that. What did you picture? And that, you know, that to me, that, and I would ask you if this is valid, allows them to more deeply inquire into their question without making it seem like, you know, you've never thought about this.
Yeah. Well, oh gosh, that's a good point. Okay, so let me put a little pin in that and say, I think so much of this whole conversation about how to talk to your kids is also a conversation about an encouragement to yourself to keep doing this work. Because I think if we're modeling that spiritual work is an important part of our lives and we as adults continue to do that work, that helps these kids to know their questions and their wonderings and their own spiritual journey is also important. When we model that it's important, then they see that and they can follow on that trajectory. But, gosh, when I think of God, I think of a lot of things. I personally love the metaphor or the image of God as a web, connecting all things and in all things and through all things. And I think of light when I think of God. It's not a lot of anthropomorphic imagery that comes to me. I've sort of pulled away from that a little bit. But I think to that point, though, we often as adults see religion or spirituality as serious. It's supposed to be very serious. But I think we need to give ourselves permission to be playful with ideas of God and ideas of religion and spirituality, because that also helps us to meet our kids where they are as well, because they are in that fully playful space. And I think we can give ourselves permission to be playful. And when we do that, that can help that unpacking process, right? Because we're giving ourselves permission to
do
that.
But it does suggest, and again, the point of my inquiry was to take the child into that same question so that we're all clear in what it is that they're inquiring about, and then moving forward. Then the challenge becomes, if you're a member of a religious community and you're talking about being on a spiritual journey that could take you anywhere, and at the moment, it could fall squarely in the doctrine and practice of that community. When this inquiry takes you out of that community and your children with it, and you've got your friends and they've all been talking about things in a certain way, what do parents do if they worry, oh, my goodness, we're leaving, our journey has taken us out of here? What do I tell my kids?
Yeah, I work with a lot of parents like that. I mean, so many of the families at my current church and in my current work are those people. And it's often part of their issue has been that because their friends or their family, a lot of it's more family than anything, right? A lot of their friends and family are very much deeply entrenched in their religious tradition, which makes it very difficult to have these conversations with those people. And they sort of enter this sort of estrangement, I think, a lot of the times with their family and friends, which is sad. It's so sad. But often these sort of religious traditions don't allow for, like you're saying, like they don't really allow for that journey, especially if that journey threatens to take you outside of that religious tradition or doctrine. But I think what I would tell those parents is, if your spirituality and if your journey is important to you, you have to not be bound. You have to allow yourself to not be bound, by tradition or creed or doctrine, because ultimately that is going to fuel and continue to work that spiritual muscle within you so that it doesn't atrophy and die in this space that doesn't feed you anymore. Paul Tillich, who's a systematic theologian and philosopher from 20th century, talks about religion and religious symbol and rituals. And he says when they stop pointing to ultimate concern, they become idols. And the ultimate concern being that which is, you know, capital T truth to you, or right, feels like capital T truth. When those things cease drawing you into that space, they're idols at that point. Yeah. They serve no purpose ultimately. And so I think I would just push people into that. Like, whatever is drawing you to ultimate concern, you and your family, create that space, enter into that space, because that's ultimately what is going to be healthiest for you and your kids on your journey.
And Tillich was pretty clear about that ultimate concern being something, yeah, that you would have to find for yourself within yourself,
yes,
and
yes,
then figure out what practices take you there. So what kind of questions do you get from parents most often?
It's partly, again, a lot of the parents come from, very traditional sort of religious backgrounds that have a very particular language associated with them, right? A lot of religions have, you know, in the Christian tradition, we call it Christianese, you know, this sort of jargon that comes along with the tradition. And when you leave that tradition or sort of journey outside of it or beyond it, a lot of parents are looking at me and looking at the church saying, okay, this feels great and beautiful. I don't have words. Like, what are the words that I use? Because this other thing had a whole language built, right, into it. And this feels more nebulous, and I don't know, you know, how to talk about it. And then beyond that, it's how to talk about it. And then how do we practice this? So again, like, these religious rituals and symbols have sort of fallen flat for us, and they do feel idolatrous a bit in the Tillichian sense. So what are some ways that we can put into place some healthy spiritual practices in our home?
What do you tell them?
The language piece is harder. Practice is easy to me, but the language piece is hard. But I would go back to that whole serious versus playful thing. Like, don't put so much pressure on it. Be playful with your language. Talk about God as a web, or talk about God as light. You know, journey and feel free to sort of find language around it. I would also encourage parents to be mindful, though, of you know, gender pronouns associated, right, with God, or you know, certain images or whatever that they decide to associate with God. But ultimately, I would just encourage parents to not put so much pressure on themselves and be playful with language. As far as practice goes, like my sweet, sweet friend Melissa, her son one night came to her, and she's very much in the same place as me as far as our journeys go. Her son came to her and one night, very fearful for some reason, and could not go to sleep, and asked if she would pray with him. And she sort of had a moment of panic, I don't know what prayer means for me anymore, and I don't know how to do that with you. So instead, she took him up to his bed, and they sat there, and she asked him to close his eyes, and his little sister Haven was with him, and she said, "Hutch, close your eyes, and I want you to imagine a river. And this river is peaceful, and it's beautiful. And you can toss your worries and your fears into this river, and that river will wash them far, far away. And you can just sit by this river and breathe, and you're okay. You're going to be okay." And they had this beautiful, I mean, it was essentially a meditation, right?
Right?
It was this guided meditation moment. And her kids ever since have asked for they want the river every night. And that's this beautiful, she allowed herself to be playful, right?
Right?
She opened herself up to different possibilities and gave them something in place of what was this sort of traditional, idolatrous for her, practice, and instead gave him something beautiful that ultimately served the same purpose, right? It brought him peace. It got him calm and allowed him to sleep. And that's beautiful. And so I think I would tell parents, create the space you want. Find the images, find the practices that make sense for you. There's a beautiful book I would recommend called Faithful Families by Tracy Smith. That's what it is. It's literally just a book full of little vignettes and examples of different practices that you can put in place with your family that could work for people in the Christian tradition and people outside of it. It's beautiful.
It sounds like so much of this just gives parents comfort to know that wherever they are on the journey, it's an okay place to be.
It's
so
okay. You
may be calling yourself unsure about whether, but in fact, you're very sure that you are searching. And so that's a you know, concrete way of looking. And it does sound
Absolutely.
Like giving them permission to be in the space they're in is probably the most empowering aspect of this. You have a new project called the Imaginarium. Tell us about it.
Yeah, thanks for asking about that. Imaginarium, I'm building that with my friend Melissa that I just mentioned. So Imaginarium essentially is we're trying to build intentional community, not around some sort of doctrine or creeds or theological framework, but rather around a value-based system wherein we imagine what a better world might mean. And that can look like a million different things, of course, depending on the topic. But imagining a better world and intentionally putting ourselves into action to make it so. And so that, gosh, will look like everything from, you know, providing nonviolent self-defense sort of classes to gathering around a table and sharing a meal together to having teaching and singing together and serving the community together. But ultimately, the idea is to create a safe space for people that no matter where they fall on any sort of religious spectrum or whether they don't fall on a religious spectrum at all, they can be part of, ultimately, we see it as spiritual community because that work is spiritual to us, but a spiritual community that is not based on some sort of theological premise that you have to get on board with in order to do that work, but rather it's a safe space that is open for all people where we can come and just create a better world together.
Anna Skates, great to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Anna Skates is a children's pastor and an author and an illustrator. She's going to be presenting How to Talk with Kids When You Don't Know What You Believe at the Wild Goose Festival in Hot Springs, North Carolina on July 14th. We've got a lot of information on our website, stateofthings.org, if you didn't get all of that. State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Sheldon Orment, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.